So Dogen, in Bodhisattva's Four Methods of Guidance, writes, "Give even a phrase or verse of the truth, it will be a wholesome seed for this and other lifetimes. Give your valuables, even a penny or a blade of grass, it will be a wholesome root for this and other lifetimes." So we've been exploring this text, this teaching of giving, the Bodhisattva path of giving. And as we study and practice with this now, now I think our seventh day, it's quite lovely how it doesn't get, we don't use it up. I find this in all the teachings, all true teachings. I think as we encounter the teaching, something happens in the interaction. So we're not just studying some words written by someone, a Japanese practitioner who lived in the 13th century. And we're not just trying to fit in what he says into the categories we already have. But there's some kind of interaction happening here. We have to find our way into the words not as outside of us. But if we just fit the words into what we already know, we miss the opportunity. So in this meeting, and this meeting is the praticca samuppada, this dependent co-arising, the jiju yu sammai, the self meeting the self. We meet the moment, we encounter something. And of course, this practice starts with stopping, slowing down. As we are simply carried along in our life, mostly too much going on, just so many inputs. So the great opportunity of this retreat, whether just coming this morning or whether came last Saturday, there is an invitation here. To slow down. Some encouragement to explore what happens when we don't move so fast, when we don't try so hard. And of course, this takes great intention. It takes a great aspiration to put a stake in the ground and not simply be carried along by the current of our karma. I always say the mindless forward momentum of our life is fierce. But it is possible to turn toward something else, to turn toward this meeting place. And this meeting place is never anywhere else, could never be anywhere else other than right here and right now. And this encouragement to give whatever, a phrase or a verse of the truth, a penny, a blade of grass. It is not what is given that that makes the difference. But how do we give whatever we have? I love, as it goes on, I was really touched today by King Ashoka. And that what he had to give was half a mango. didn't even have a whole mango. Poor guy. And in giving that, that half a mango was enough food for hundreds of monks. Of course, half a mango isn't enough, could never be enough. But somehow in the act of giving what he had, there was plenty. One of the stories we often tell, I guess there are many, of course, many stories in Buddhist mythology, but one perhaps resonant for both Melissa and me and others is of the bird and the forest fire. And there's a forest fire on one side of the mountain, and a little bird flies over the mountain to a lake on the other side of the mountain and can get just one drop of water on his wings, and he carries it over in his beak, and he drops the drop of water on the forest fire. And he goes back and forth until he dies of exhaustion. Now, I always thought this story ended there, and actually found it quite inspiring to give our life for some worthy cause. I think we all so want to make a difference. All of us, I think, have some sense of how brief and precious this life is. So how to spend it? And for me, this image of the bird doing what he could, doing what she could, it has been quite inspiring now for many, many years. And then several years ago, I heard Melissa tell this story, and she, as usual, actually knew a little more than me, and knew that there's another part of the story, which is that the gods in heaven, the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, look down. And they saw this bird. And they were so moved that they began to cry. they began to cry, and their tears put out the fire. And this is also the teaching of Buddhism, that when we give ourselves to the Dharma, when we give ourselves to our life, that we are supported by all of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas in the many realms. That there is something that happens in the world. And of course, these Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are just images for something beyond comprehension. For me, some kind of beauty and love and compassion that is greater than we could ever imagine. We can make up our wildest fantasies, and it doesn't come close to what is available for us, what is waiting, what is already freely given. And how do we access this? We access this incredible generosity of the universe by being generous, by giving what we have, by giving what we have, whether we think it is valuable or not. And perhaps by giving what we have, especially when it seems valuable. And that this act of giving is the act of entering This is the act of the act of giving. Also, I think the act of bowing down. That which we hold on to most tightly, that which we are most proud of about ourselves, or most think, well, at least for me, I think, well, I may not be very whatever, I may not be wise enough or good enough, but I'm a hard worker, so I'll just keep working hard, and maybe that will be okay. And so I can use hard work as a way of staying separate. Or we can use our, be proud of our competence or our helpfulness. And we, so we enact that. I enact my hard work, and then people say, oh, you're really a good person. And then I can deflect that and say, well, of course they think I'm a good person because I'm working so hard, because I know I'm really not okay. And in enacting that thing for me, of course, what is it for you? The thing that you hold on to. Well, at least I am fill in the blank. So to find a way to give up even working hard, to give up whatever it is that we think we are, and in this giving, we find our way in, and in this giving, I love how Dogen talks about it being a seed for this and other lifetimes. It will be a root for this and other lifetimes. With the emphasis being on this act of just doing one thing, just planting the seed is not harvesting the plant. In planting the seed, I think we plant seeds in faith. One of the things I love most about working in the garden is that it is such a constant reminder that I am not the one doing the work. So there's some spinach seeds and lettuce seeds in the garden, and just yesterday I saw a little tiny spinach plant coming up. Now, I cleared the weeds away and made the little furrow and put the little seeds in and pushed the dirt over and tamped it down and watered once, and then the rain watered. But I did not make the seed grow. I do not know how the seed sprouted. I do not do that, cannot do that. But I can, and you can, create conditions where life happens. Can create conditions where we move toward blossoming. We move toward the blossoming moment. But it is so important in planting these seeds, in giving, that the full moment is just the giving. As we've been talking about, if we are giving for some other motivation, if we're giving as some way of hoping we get something else, then it doesn't quite make it. One other translation of this uses the word freely, free giving, instead of just giving. So this dana, this generosity, again and again, is the fulfillment in the act. So for me, when I put a seed in the ground, when I put the pansies, took them out of their six-pack and stuck them in a pot. That in itself is a wonderful thing. And of course, wonderful when the seeds actually sprout and when the plants flourish in the sun and in the rain. But that flourishing, the results of our activity, the results of our giving, are beyond our control. So beautifully last night, someone in our Dharma dialogue was talking about getting to that moment when things in his life were so turned upside down that he totally gave up. Gave up any hope of control, gave up any sense of how it should be or would be or who he was. And in this moment of giving up, and sometimes this giving up is quite dramatic and quite sudden, not something we can will to happen, but this allowing things to be as they are. So sometimes dramatic and sometimes very subtle. Sometimes just letting each breath be the breath. Letting the round of Zazen be the round of Zazen, not the round of Zazen that is the path to somewhere else. In the end, I think we are encouraged to give our practice to the practice. So to give each breath to the breath. And I made a special request this morning that we read the passage from Chenul. It turns out Steve had already picked it out, so he was just controlling my mind, and I didn't know it. Be that as it may, but this this wonderful passage that says, if people aspire to the path of Buddhahood while obstinately holding to their feeling that the Buddha is outside of the mind or Dharma is outside of nature, that these people, no matter what they do, and of course these people are you and me, who are quite convinced that awakening, that Buddha nature is someplace else. But as long as we're looking someplace else, he said, it's like trying to make rice by boiling sand. No matter how hard we work, we'll never be enough. So we are encouraged to, in some ways, to practice as if. This is not about simply trying to convince yourself that Buddha nature is right here, is already manifesting. This is not an argument to have with ourselves. And so it's not a matter of faith or belief in that way. But some willingness, and for me, always helpful to say, well, what if that actually is true? So to sort of sidestep, is it true? Isn't it true? Do I believe it? Do I not believe it? But what if it's true that this very place is the Lotus Land? This very body, the Buddha. And so what if I practice this giving, not having to believe in it, but practice this generosity with whatever I have, blade of grass, something of great value. But this fundamental practice of dana, of generosity, this first, most important of the, we might say, of the paramitas, this activity that includes everything. So this is the invitation to, with each step, give our life to this step, give each period of Zen to each period of Zen, each breath to each breath. And then the outcome will happen certainly. And we will be met, we will be supported beyond our wildest hopes and aspirations. Thank you. So let's go around and say our names. David.
Melissa.
Steve.
Fran.
Ed.
Nat.
Harold.
Julie.
Diane.
Gail.
Jesse.
David.
Melissa.
Oh, rats. I always... You should start. So this is a time for our Dharma dialogue, so I invite you to sit comfortably, to say your name occasionally if you'd like.
Just blurt it out.
And invite questions, observations, what's alive for you in this moment.
Ed and then Steve?
I'd just like to thank you. You know, one of the things that struck me about all of these talks is how people reach out and touch our minds and how powerful that is. How you know, it's not as though I can get into your mind, but your words, everyone's words, have this extraordinary power with me, you know, not over me, but with me to change the way I see the world. It's just really marvelous. I'm you know, it's that little seed that gets thrown out and plants itself here. Here, and I can feel it grow.
Well, and it's also the Dharma talk in some ways is given by everyone. I mean, even though one person is up embarrassing him or herself, there is some way that there is a participation, and in this context that. You're not just listening, right? There's some meeting happening here. And I think this is the gift of our attention when we listen. That is beyond, you know, giver, receiver, talk, listener, speaker. And such a delight from you know, any side, huh?
It's nice to know we can give back.
Mm-hmm. Well, just a cautionary note on the it's nice to know we can give back. I think David was just pointing out that there is this reciprocity.
Right.
So you don't want to divide yourself from it. It's actually all the people who have given talks and all the people who have listened to the talks and contributed to the Dharma dialogue are doing what Dogen's recommending in the first section. And we can't help doing it. I think that's part of the thing. It's not like, now you must be generous. But there's just generosity that rises out of us. And you're receiving the words, the seed, in the earth receiving the seed. Everything's being really generous. So we want to make sure that we don't hang back and not realize that we are fully participatory in this. And enjoy it. You know?
Yeah.
Or not. I mean, you don't have to enjoy it, but I enjoy it. You enjoy it. I know you enjoy it. So this is really just a very clear, every single thing we do in the Dharma, coming into the room, bowing, walking, making food, you know, cleaning, going to the bathroom, going to sleep, everything we do is this, is the dependent co-arising.
Yeah.
and we can't help but be part of it. So part of it is to wake up to the fact that we are giver, as you said in your talk, giver, receiver, and gift.
Right, right, here it is.
Here it is.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
So David, I was particularly struck by your example of yourself as a person who can work hard and does so, and how that's such a wonderful thing that you're able to do that, and also wondering how is it, you know, that there's some sense of not being satisfied with that, and people saying, oh, you know, what a great job you're doing, David, you know, you're a wonderful guy, and people recognize that and say so, and yet there's this feeling of, oh, you know, if they only knew, you know, at least for me, that's the way it is, you know, and I feel like, you know, I don't, it's a very difficult thing to properly value the contribution that we're already making, you know. Because it's easy to fall off to either side, you know. It's a narrow path, you know. You can think that, you know, you're doing a great job, and, you know, aren't I wonderful? But there's also this, you know, this giving, this doing, this working can't actually fill the sense of lack that I often feel. You know, it doesn't really fix that. And when I'm coming from that place of lacking, I don't properly value what I'm already contributing, and I say, I'm not doing anything. You know, yeah. When actually I am, you know, I'm, you know, there's plenty of stuff that I'm doing, and I refuse to recognize that, and I wonder, you know, in your sense of what if, you know, what if I, you know, were better able to actually put the proper value on what I'm already doing? You know, wouldn't that then be an encouragement towards doing more? And so the what if that came up for me is, well, what if I am already a bodhisattva, you know, and I'm just not, you know, really appreciating, you know, what it is that I'm giving, you know? And maybe, just maybe, if I were able to bring a more complete understanding of how, you know, the reality actually is, you know, that I am contributing, that would encourage me to come forth, and, you know, not from this place of lack, but from the place of fullness.
So many aspects there, and one is this knife edge thing of, so I actually love to work hard. I mean, I love to be engaged, and let's have a project, let's do something big. But in a heartbeat, it shifts and becomes, oh, God, I've just got to keep working hard. And it really is, from the outside, I think, almost imperceptible. Or in my mind, it's imperceptible. But makes all the difference in the world for my experience. That I think it is, you know, what a gift that I can work hard, that I can see and do. But when I do it from the place of lack, then it's never enough. And it doesn't matter how many people pat me on the back or do that, because the working hard is a demonstration of that I'm not worth it or something, you know? And then this... It's the importance of appreciating what we're already doing. I once asked a Tibetan teacher, there's something, he was talking about something, and I said, is it okay to know when we do something good? Because I think, well, you shouldn't know, you know, you shouldn't. And he said, well, of course, it's the nourishment we need to be able to face what we have to face. You know, exactly what you're saying.
Just so,
Oh, I just was moved to thank everybody who's here for creating this space. I think we all come here and give whatever it is that we have to give, and we create this sacred space for this month, and then on, before and after that, which is just wonderful. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jesse.
And I also had a question about the beard hair.
Can we do that?
And the retainer know it was beard hair? Because I don't know if I was really sick and someone gave me beard hair. I would have a hard time receiving it. Thanks.
Well, and actually, this was the beard was quite prized in ancient China, that this was something of great value to the king, and the healer who was working with his retainer was some kind of shaman, probably a Taoist healer, and had this special formula where you needed to have this, you know, it's like the special antibiotic. And so that the king would give the sign of his wisdom and his authority to the retainer.
So it was actually medicine.
Yeah.
Was it just
beard hair?
Yeah. But who knows? You might try that to with your friends. So just
a condiment. But this is, you know, again, to bring everything back to Dogen's main point, everything he's saying is coming back to his point that giving and receiving is always going on. And you don't need to know what it is. You just, the king gives you a medicinal cup, you take it. You know, the world offers the spring to you, you take it. You don't have to think about it too hard. You know, you don't want to look, you could get grossed out by all kinds of things. And, you know, the worms, the compost, right? But it's all this great gift of the world.
Good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
What you said, David, just kind of reminded me of a quandary that I always have about what is right effort. Well, pretty much everything that I'm doing now depends at bottom, I mean, if I'm going to be successful, on my creativity, it isn't necessarily a grind part, it's creative, it's an artistic part. And in a moment, or in a performance, or for example, this coming Friday, this couple asked me to include in my normal Friday night thing a tribute to their daughter, who this would have been her 30th birthday, actually yesterday, but she died when she was in her early 20s. And I was really happy. I'm happy to be able to do that, and it's sort of just a last example. I'm really, you know, I'm not asking these people for any special money for it. It's a gift. But there are days when I feel so anxious, or so like I need to just chill, that I can't face my work and the quandary I have as well. I know that if I really could just get into something, menial, whatever, if I could just work, maybe I would lose my anxiety. And then there are other times when I feel like, you know, I have to give myself some space because there's something else, the reason I have this aversion to work, or certain kinds of work, or aversion to crossing tasks off right now, is because I need to experience a kind of freedom from that. Like my list is not controlling me. I have to remind myself that's my list instead of a list from, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's not always easy to know which it is, whether the cure is to just Yeah, hey, buckle down. You'll stop feeling so bad if you just get some work done. And whether it's, you need to demonstrate to yourself that you cannot work and that you won't die as a result. And I often just don't know what to do. Try both ways.
Well, and I think, thank you for putting that so clearly. And I would say, well, yes. You know, there we are, and we do one thing or another. We sniff the wind and head left or head right. And we want some certainty. So, you know, we often want a rule where... But in the meeting the moment, you do one, and, oh, well, actually, that wasn't it for today. So you go back and do the other. But somehow to trust that it's okay not to know do something. And so important to notice when we make a rule. And sometimes rules are wonderful, but my experience is they all have a shelf life. So when I start feeling bad, all I need to do is walk around the block 3 times. Then I'm cool. You know, so maybe for a week that works. You know, but then it doesn't. And then I'm back and, okay, sensing.
On quickly, the mirror of this is that not only... there are a lot of I don't know what the gift is that I need to give to myself. And in the same way, I often give the wrong gift to another person. Something I thought was a gift. Right. An invitation to get together when the person is extremely anxious about seeing me or something like that. And I blew it. Or honesty when tact was called for. Or lapses when discipline was called for.
Right.
I don't know. And it's the same. It's the same. Whether it's to myself or to others, it's the same one mistake after another.
Yeah, it really is one mistake after the other. And, you know, I just had a line from a Stephen Sondheim song just bubbled up into my head. Sometimes I stand in the middle of the floor, not going left, not going right. You know, there's that I don't know that you're pointing to that's really important. We can't know the outcome of our actions. We just can't. It's too complicated. We can only do what seems best in the moment without making rules, as David was saying. But I think another key element in this whole conversation is something we haven't really pointed to that much, but when we're doing things to nourish the self, that's a good recipe for falling flat on our faces because we forget about the great interconnection that we're part of. When we forget that great interconnection, the world gets very, very narrow and it's much harder to decide what to do. So even with praise and blame, you know, that in itself is so distracting. So if I'm working really hard and it's just something that I'm doing, that's very different from I'm working really hard so that people will see that I'm a person who works really hard, and then they come up to me and they say, oh, you're great, you work really hard, and then I feel terrible because they don't know who I am. Can you hear all the I's in that sentence? Right? Instead, there's the work itself. Praise and blame don't get you anywhere. You know, they ultimately, whether we're really doing great things or really doing terrible, stupid things, I mean, it's a guarantee that we're doing great things and really stupid things, and that sometimes they're the same thing. Right? You know, it might say something, do something, and half the world goes, oh, and the other half goes, oh. You know, we can't be pulled by that. So there's definitely this balance and this knife edge of self-care and too much, good and bad, right and wrong, but ultimately, it's just one thing after the other. And so to watch when the self idea gets to be the biggest thing in the activity, I think that's really, the alarm bells should go off then. Me, 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 me. The the Buddha said this, you know, the only thing I teach is to see through the delusion of I, me, and mine. You don't want to make a fetish out of that either. I knew a guy in a meditation class once who refused to use those words. Of course, you know, he was quite mentally ill, but I thought that, wow, that's really interesting. He said a Zen teacher taught him that. Mm-hmm. So don't do that.
Don't do what Zen teachers say.
But
I love what you're pointing to about that beyond praise and blame, beyond how it comes out, that the only thing we can have an input on is our intention. You know, and so we do our best, and then sometimes people say wonderful, sometimes people say terrible, and we just have to do our best, whatever.
Yeah. And I think if the intention is clouded by a wish to adorn the self, you want to look at that. You just want to look at it. Yeah,
just speaking to Matt's issue of, you know, giving the wrong gift to yourself or to other people, I had a moment some months ago where I just at the point of making a decision about what to do with my Saturday. And I was, am I going to be doing the right thing with this? And this thought of, you know, if I was a better Zen student, I would know, you know, I would just glide into the right thing. And then I thought, you know, what do we have right here? Right here we have a human being who is fearing regret. And that is what is going on right now, is a fear of regret in this spot. Okay, I noticed what was going on. And then I made a decision, and I don't know if it was the right one or the wrong one, but there was that, you know, that turning into it and noticing what was going on, which was a fear.
Yeah.
Right. But being able to see that was what was causing it.
You're such a good Zen student.
Now you've ruined it.
I know.
Oh no, I gotta try to do that thing again.
Regret every future comment that she doesn't say.
She last
time. I remember once in 2013.
I've just never gotten there again.
But I think your point, the intention is to say, what is it? What's going on right now? You know, not an empty what is it, but really, like, what? And then go ahead, make a million mistakes.
Let's go walk in the garden.